Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. High Velocity Radio is brought to you by PSI Digital Media Experts, the market leader in delivering digital media services. From manufacturing millions of CDs and DVDs to turnkey e-commerce solutions and streaming high-definition video over their worldwide content distribution network, PSI has the solutions to meet your needs. Find PSI at psidiscs.com, psidiscs.com. The High Velocity Radio Show is where we celebrate innovative professionals producing better results in less time. Produced and directed by Lee Cantor and brought to you live from Radio X Studio in Atlanta, Georgia. Now here are your hosts, Todd Schnick and Stone Payton.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. This is your host, Stone Payton, and joining me in the studio this morning is our producer, Lee Cantor. And my good buddy, Todd Schnick. What's happening, Todd?
Not much, Stone. How are you this morning?
I am doing well. Get us caught up on the marathon Ironman training stuff you're doing.
Oh, well, hardly an Ironman. Doing a little half marathon training. Body is real sore, so I guess that means I'm maintaining my schedule. Feeling good. Hurts so good. It's one of those hurts so good kind of things.
So when is our proof point? When do you have a real race that we can all get behind and start to watch?
The race that I'm training for isn't until April, but the first real test is on January 2nd when I'm supposed to run for a full 3 miles. And as of today, I wouldn't be able to do that. So, every training day, you get a little bit better, run a little farther, feel a little ache a little bit less, and it's done. So we're making good progress.
And you're blogging about it, and you've got a fan base, yeah?
Got a fan base. It's growing like a weed. We might have 10 fans now.
All right. What's the blog? Tell our listeners what the blog is.
The blog is intrepidrunner.wordpress.com. It's just it was really meant to be a way for me to journal for myself and organize all the information. I'm honest to goodness, I am as a rookie as it comes on running. So I'm learning as I go on this, but it's been exciting. I've got a couple of guys out there that are running with me that this little blog inspired them to get off their fat butt like mine and get out and do some running. So it's been fun to get some other people inspired to do it.
And you made this decision when you were on the couch after Thanksgiving dinner, right?
No. It was Thanksgiving morning. My fat butt was on the couch watching the Macy's parade, and I was keeping an eye on Twitter and realized all my friends had just wrapped up running the half marathon Thanksgiving morning. I thought, you know, I need to be doing that instead of sitting here eating all the, you know, the crispy things that goes on the green bean casserole. You know, so that's why I made the decision to do it. So it's going well. It's exciting. I feel like I'm making progress.
Well, we're all behind you, and we won't crack any jokes, I can promise you.
Thank you. Appreciate that, and I believe that as far as I can throw you.
Well, we had a banner week last week, and I had a really busy week last week. We launched Speed School on Monday. We're up to 22 students, and, of course, we still have another week before a lot of them can drop out really easy, but we haven't had any dropouts. And incidentally, one of our guests a little bit later in the show, Stephanie Frost, who is with us, I guess it was Friday, went out on Twitter and I said, okay, the next 5 students to enroll will get a free copy of Stephanie and Eric's book, Marketing Unmasked. And I don't, you know, maybe one of those deals where you clap and the grasshopper doesn't jump or something. I'm screwing that analogy up.
But yes, I have no idea what you're talking about.
But at any rate, you know, I guess it was 17 minutes later, you know, we had 5 new students. So,
but they all said, only if Stephanie signs it. We don't want Eric signing it.
No, they didn't want anything to do with Eric. So we did that. We launched Speed School on Monday, and then Wednesday I produced, that is Stone produced, 3 Radio X shows, and I think Lee had to stay up all night and clean them up.
He's almost got them fixed, yeah. He's almost got them ready to go.
So that was a lot of fun. And then just yesterday I was in the pulpit.
Oh, dear.
Oh, yeah. I did the offering meditation.
Oh, dear.
And I opened it by jumping on them about their branding, because Saturday night we had the Christmas party, but we have a children's Christmas party, and then the Christmas party that we all go to, the older generation goes to, is referred to as the adult Christmas party. And so I jumped on
about
that.
So you weren't at that one.
I was at that one, but I felt like we needed a major rebranding effort. I didn't feel like that jived too well with the with the whole congregational spirit and atmosphere. So we had a good week, a busy week, and we're not going to do a show on the 28th. Next week we're going to have Rebecca Staten-Reinstein, I think, who we did a video dust jacket interview with down in Florida.
Yep.
And I'm working on John Miller out in Denver. He's got a new book coming out called Outstanding. So we got a lot of cool stuff coming up. But we have a marvelous show for you this morning. A little bit later in the show, we're going to interview the better half of the author team behind Marketing Unmasked, Miss Stephanie Frost. But first up this morning on the High Velocity Radio Show is a gentleman by the name of Rick Smith. He's with EliteBuilder.com. He's been on CNN, Fox News, Bloomberg, and some other well-recognized national venues. But he's finally hit the big time, guys, and he's here on the High Velocity Radio Show.
After today, sales are going to go through the roof.
Oh, yeah. Marketing's a non-issue after today. Welcome to the show, Rick.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, we are delighted to have you. So tell us a little bit about this new book, The Leap. One of the things that I noticed very quickly in doing my extensive research is you're suggesting that anyone can have an extraordinary career. So say more about that.
Well, basically, the background of the book, I was in my mid-30s. I had been, if you look at my resume, it pretty much summed up with, laid off twice, quit twice, and was sort of sitting there, had just recently been laid off, and, I wasn't really worried about finding a job. I knew I'd find some employment, but I was, for the first time in my life, was sort of looking in the mirror, asking myself, is this it? Like, this is the limit of my contribution in my life. And within a 3-year period, I ended up, surprisingly, I had a best-selling book. I started a company that was generating, throwing off millions of dollars. I was hanging out with Bono and Richard Branson and all these top corporate executives. And sort of it happened so quickly that it made me sort of stand back and say, how in the world could something like this happen to me? I mean, and the other thing that was interesting is a lot of the people that I would talk to who were so quick to write me off when I was down at age 37 were easy to rational, real quick to rationalize, oh, that could never be me. You were always destined to do that. And so I started to study, this inflection, like how is it that an average person is able to break out and do something beyond what they ever thought possible, and ran into, dozens and dozens of other people who actually had done very similar things. And when you really study that inflection point, I started to notice that there were some, these stories were all very different, but there were some very clear patterns that were consistent with among all of these people and actually consistent among my own story. And that's where I got the motivation. Like, I've got to get this down and share this with other people. There's a lot more out there than you think.
Well, I'm on the edge of my seat. I want to hear at least one of these patterns. Tell us a little bit about what you saw.
Well, what's interesting is there are three sort of dominant myths that hold so many people back. So the first myth that that people believe is that in order to make a leap in my life, that I have to change who I am. And they hear this through, in my instance, through 20 years of performance evaluations that said, hey, that was good, but that could be, that you could be great if you only fixed yourself. and what I found is that the people that were able to break out actually never were successful fixing anything. They just moved in a direction. They found themselves in a job that leveraged their strengths and their passions in many cases for the first time in their career, and that's really what allowed them their performance to take off. I call this finding your primary color, that intersection of your strengths and your passions. When you can overlap that with your daily activities, your performance and your impact really takes off to dramatic levels.
Well, speak more about this primary color assessment. I'm intrigued to know about that and figure out what my color is.
Well, basically, the idea was you look at a lot of the assessment tests that are out there. Myers-Briggs, whenever I speak, I say, hey, has anybody ever taken Myers-Briggs? And nearly everyone in the room raises their hand. And yet the problem with a lot of these tools that are out there is they're interesting and they're descriptive. But you're left standing there saying, where's the so what? So what do I do with this information? And so actually in the year 2000, I came up with this idea. I've worked a lot over the last 8 to 10 years with one of the leading industrial psychologists. And we created this primary color assessment tool that we put online for free. And basically the idea is everyone has a primary color, a specific spot on a spectrum that represents the intersection of your strengths and your passions. But the fact that we created a spectrum with an X and a Y axis means that where you are on that spectrum, actually says a lot. And you can compare it to where your current job is. What are the behaviors or activities that you're rewarded for in your current job? Do those align with your strengths and your passions? If you get promoted once or twice, are you moving closer to leveraging your strengths and your passions every day, or are you moving farther away? And if you look at the pattern of my career, I actually started on the opposite end in an accounting role I moved into sales. I was in management consulting for a while. But it wasn't until I sort of found myself in this entrepreneurial, creative leadership type of a role that my performance really took off to the levels that I was capable of.
So what is your color?
I'm a purple heart, which is a strong intersection of creativity and leadership. So sort of selling, coming up with a new idea and selling it to people when it's never been done before.
Well, you mentioned one myth, and it's this idea that we have to change who we are. What are some other myths that you run into?
Well, the second myth is that people, you know, I call it the Jerry Maguire myth. So this belief that you have to go it alone. You know, there's this great scene in the Jerry Maguire movie. Tom Cruise stands up. He's got this new direction for the company. He writes it in a manifesto, and he stands up and says, you know, who's with me? And all he hears is crickets, except for Renee Zellweger, which is not a bad consolation. But basically, you know, this I think is what everyone's afraid of. You come up with some new direction, some great new idea, and you're left hanging out there on your own. And in fact, that's not at all what happened to me. It's not at all what happened to all the people I studied. It was the ability to bring other people along with you that led so many people to success. And the more I studied it, I found that there is actually a specific type of their characteristics of an idea. Big, selfless, and simple ideas are uniquely advantaged to bring other people along with you in whatever direction you're trying to go.
I know you're a best-selling author, and I know that your work is solid because I've read it. But I've read a lot, and I've noticed that there's a great deal of really strong material out there that doesn't sell so well. What's your secret as an author for producing something that's actually profitable?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, the state of the book industry right now is just chaotic.
It's a mess.
I have this discussion with many other current or past best-selling authors. And I think we're all trying to figure it out. I would say that it goes back to, you know, I sort of write books as a hobby. This is not my full-time job. This was a book that I had a message that I really wanted to get out. And so it's not really filled with consulting speak. I think this is more, you know, it's a book for the every person that's sitting here at the end of, you know, hey, we're coming out of a recession and people are sitting here saying, I guess I'm going to survive, but you know what? I don't want to just survive. Is this really what I'm supposed to be doing with my life? And how does somebody who's had successes and failures, who's sort of stuck in, you know, your mom's proud of you, but you're really frustrated with where you're at, how do you change the trajectory of your, you know, the direction of your life in a positive way? And I think that's what's really resonated about this book is there's a lot of people sitting there asking them the same questions, from 25-year-olds that are in a terrible job market to, chief marketing officers of large corporations that have all this pay and prestige and are still asking themselves, like, how did I ever end up in this situation, and what should I really be doing with the rest of my career?
The leap is in essence a three-step process, if I'm understanding correctly. And the first step is shattering these myths that we just talked about. What are the next steps?
Well, it's really the three steps are these three myths. So,
okay.
You know, you find your way to your primary color, to your strengths and your passions every day, and you take that energy and you focus in on an idea that's big, selfless, and simple. And the third thing has to deal with, the myth specifically is, in order to make this great leap, I've got to take a great risk. You know, like, hey, that was great for you, Rick. You know, you started a company. It's worth, you know, a lot of money. Interact with all these great people. But I'm not in a position to do that right now. I can't take that risk. And as I studied all these amazing people, the interesting thing was, myself nor anyone that I studied really took a major risk in their life. In fact, it was their ability to explore but mitigate risk safely in new directions that allowed them to be successful. In fact, they stack the deck in their favor. And I call this the spark sequence, where, you know, rather than, you know, saying, hey, I'm frustrated with my job, I'm going to go in and quit, I'm going to go start a bed and breakfast, and then, you know, 6 months later you find out you don't really like cleaning up after people, the people that were successful the people that were successful said, you know, hey, maybe I'm frustrated with my job, but What else is out there? Maybe I want to move into a marketing role or move into an entrepreneurial role. What are some things that I can do today to begin exploring that, to find mentors outside of my current role, to volunteer for initiatives outside of my division, you know, that are supported by my company, but to answer really three specific questions. If I go in a new direction, am I any good at it? Do I like it? You know, am I fired up about the day-to-day activities? And is there a real opportunity for me there? In almost every case that I studied, the people that were successful were able to answer all those questions before they left the current role that they were in.
I wish I'd have read this book and known about number three, and so does my wife, several years ago, because I have a tendency to jump off the cliff. So tell us more about the work. This writing these books is a nice part of the Rick Smith that we're all coming to enjoy, but tell us a little bit more about the work. How do you make the rent?
Well, I was very fortunate to start a company several years ago that has done, you know, exceptionally well, and sold that about a year and a half ago. So I've been focusing on this book, and now I'm currently in the process of launching another for-profit company that, you know, hopefully we'll be able to announce very soon, and actually an even more significant nonprofit company that I'm partnering with some fairly influential organizations to get up and running.
And you're out speaking, and you're speaking inside the organizations and in associations. What kinds of things do you speak about?
Well, it's really around how do you achieve breakout levels of performance? So again, you apply these same myths toward people that are in middle management, people that are in sales positions, and are sitting here feeling like, okay, I've sort of hit the equilibrium. I know what I'm able to produce, and that's about it. And it's kind of how do you use some of these external tools that are actually much more in your control than you thought to amplify your impact within the organization, to amplify your leadership role within the organization. I mean, I, for one, was totally stuck in this area. I didn't think I was a great leader. I thought my performance was limited by a lot of factors. And then found myself in a role where all of a sudden I'm extremely effective as an inspirational leader and extremely effective doing these other things. And it was so much more accessible than I would have ever believed. That's really the main message that I try to get out.
I want to shift gears on you for just a moment, if I might. You know, we have a lot of listeners who are aspiring authors. They think, you know, maybe there's a book in them, or they feel like, you know, maybe they want to make that leap, and at some point, and maybe they'll follow your advice and do it right, not do it like I did it, and maybe become a consultant to other people. But tell us a little bit about the marketing. I get the idea that you're really good at marketing what you do.
I don't know if I am or not. The first thing I would say is you have to become really a student of the process. You know, I think getting a book published, even just getting it out in the market, is so much more difficult than I would have ever thought, and I think that than most people perceive. Just getting a book published, there are in the business world, there are about 200,000 new books every year published in the the nonfiction business space, and only about 10,000 actually make it onto retail shelf space. So, and you know, because you have all these perennial sellers that take up so much of the space, so it's extremely hard to even, you know, the very first step, getting an agent to represent you, you know, in many ways is the most difficult task. And then the ironic thing is even at the end of that process. So I've had, you know, two books out now, both have been national bestsellers, both have been, you know, so top 100th of 1% of business books, and I have not made a penny on either one of the books that I've, you know, that I've written. In fact, I'm probably in the hole in the current one, given the investments in the web things that I've done. But what I would tell people is you have to, you know, there is value in having something to say, but it's very much what I call a second bounce activity, where the first bounce, you know, when you, hey, I'm going to go make a sale and I get a commission, that's a first bounce activity. You get the feedback, you get the commission or whatever that, you know, remuneration is immediately. Writing a book and even speaking are second bounce activities where you do something because you want to do it, because you've got the energy, you're passionate about it, you've got a story to tell. And then things start to show up down the road that you could have never planned for or expected. It creates options for you in your life from which you can then pick, hey, now I can have this impact in a nonprofit that I probably never would have had. Now I can have credibility to to impact different audiences or to launch a company and get initial customers to sign up because I've done something in the past.
Well, you're on Twitter and you have a blog. Have you found that those tools have been helpful in getting the message out about the Leap?
You know, I would say yes and no. There's, one of my favorite books, and not really for the reason it was written, I think, is the book Crush It by Gary Vaynerchuk. It's a fascinating story, and there's a lot of rah-rah. I mean, you have to be compelled by his, energy and emotion. But what's so fascinating about it is he sort of articulates that, hey, the good news is anybody can win at this game now. The barriers to success are no longer controlled by the channel players that, the Harvards, you have to have a degree to get the expertise to become ubiquitous, that you can actually become ubiquitous first without the expertise, and then expertise becomes a benefit of being out in the market. The bad news is he really shows, it takes 20 hours a day in that space to become really successful at it, to really stand out. You have to have great content, but you've got to put in, I think he still does, 8 to 10 hours a day just commenting on other people's blogs and getting your message out, responding to people's questions to you. It's an extremely significant amount of time and energy that it takes. So on my part, I've had, what I would consider a fairly successful blog. I've enjoyed doing it at ricksmith.me, but the development of the subscriber base has been much harder than I would have ever thought. And part of the reason is because I'm not spending 12 hours a day, commenting on other blogs and being out there. So it's effective if you can really, if you can really put in the time to use. I'll give you one other interesting insight. I went to one of the top blogger conferences out in Vegas recently, and I met, it's 300 of the top people out there. And there are some that are really killing it, that are making a living off of blogging and advertising and all the residual things that come with that. I would say 90% of even that top group are not. In many cases, they don't make any money from their blog. It's the second bounce activity, the fact that
the speaking gigs.
Yeah, they speak a little. Consulting. They have social media consulting on the side. They talk to companies about Twitter and things like that that are really supporting supporting their activities. So, and it's funny, as you talk to them, they're like, oh my God, now that I'm actually getting some success in the business side, I don't have time to do all this anymore. I can't tweet all.
But they're, you talk about Gary spending 20 hours a day, and that's what he does. I mean, he makes personal relationships, and then he makes friends, and then they all buy the book. I mean, you're familiar with Chris Brogan, too. I mean, he spent 6 months building community around trust agents and dialoguing on every platform he could find. And got to know people that way, and then when the book was out, they were in line to get it. So it's a great commentary. You said that you have to invest the time, though, and there are a lot of people that can't do that. And what Gary says, stop watching season 2 of Lost on DVD and work till 3 a.m. every night. That's what it's going to take. That's what I had to do. There's yeah, I get that, and everybody at this table certainly puts the time in, but not everybody can do that. Are there lessons in the Leap for a lot of our community and a lot of the listeners and a lot of our clients are authors? Are there lessons in the Leap for authors? Are there things they can apply to help them market what they're doing?
Yeah, I would say, again, I think part of the reason that I've been fortunate in the books that I've written is because I talked about things that I was really passionate about. I wasn't saying, hey, here's the hot new market, now I'm going to go become an expert in that space. My intentions really, the first book I wrote was owned by the company that I, from the very beginning. So I knew I wasn't going to make any money at it. And they were like, great, you can write the book on nights and weekends. You better not miss your numbers, or you're fired. And so, focus on the things that are really authentic to you. I think that's where your real voice comes out. And then the second thing I would say is just, it's around this whole idea of simplicity. The ideas that catch on are very complex situations that are distilled down to a simple solution that multiple people can resonate with. That's why, the Gary Vaynerchuk book, that's one of the reasons I think it's successful, is because people in all different walks of life can read that and take – And it immediately relates to them. In fact, my current book, The Leap, one of the most interesting, the first book I wrote was called The Five Patterns of Extraordinary Careers, very professionally focused career development book, very, very specific niche it was trying to target. The Leap has a much broader potential appeal, and it's amazing where I hear, you know, housewives that are thinking about getting back into the workforce that are like, oh my, this was written exactly for me, or, you know, senior executives that are 50 that are saying, okay, what do I do with the last 15 years of my career? I've had this success, I've made some money, now I've got flexibility, I really want to have an impact, how do I go do that? So that, you know, appeal to the broadest audience as possible with simplistic, powerful messages that are, you know, in many cases, you know, the more counterintuitive, the better, I would say.
Well, I'll tell you, the messages that really stood out for me, of course, are the three myths, that you don't really have to change who you are, that you don't have to be alone, you're not necessarily alone, and then that third one, that you don't necessarily have to jump off of a cliff and take that dramatic risk. I also feel like I picked up in your work, though, a theme that it's not about trying to fix your weaknesses. Can you say more about that?
Well, I think what's interesting, so we put this primary colors test online. You know, it's at primarycolorassessment.com. We offered it for, you know, cost me a lot of money to develop it. We've been offering it for free now for about 5 months. We just passed 600,000 page views on with no advertising.
Wow.
So it's really struck a chord. Well, what's interesting is we're able to capture all this data. And so we can, so I can now tell you in a consulting career, as an example, what are the strengths and passions that are most correlated with success at different moments in time in that career. So, for example, in the very early stages, years 1 through 5, it's, you know, there's a lot of glamour, but the reality is it's analytical independent research. You're stuck in a closet throwing meat every once in a while. You just crank out these, you know, this output. Whereas if you develop through team leadership, project leadership, and eventually as a partner or a senior partner, it's strategic selling, a completely different skill set that's required. And I think what it illustrates is sort of counterintuitive to how people think about their careers. They think, you know, I'm going to grow in my career by changing over time, by becoming more of what I'm not. And the reality is the jobs that you're in, if you're, you know, from a marketing entry-level person to a marketing executives, the jobs are actually what change dramatically. The activities you're asked to do, the behaviors on which you're measured, that changes dramatically over the course of the career. Your strengths and your passions, and by that I mean, you know, what are the challenges that you're best at overcoming? What are the challenges that most engage you on a daily basis? They actually don't change dramatically over the course of your career. So the more you can find that primary color, find those challenges that engage you, that you're great at, and then steer your career in that direction, the more success you're going to have over time.
Wow, that is good stuff. How can our listeners find out more about your work and about the book and this assessment? What's the best way for them to reach you?
The central site is leapbuilder.com. LEAPBUILDER.com. You can get access to a whole bunch of different free resources there. My blog site is ricksmith.me. The primary color assessment can specifically be found at primarycolorassessment.com. And my Twitter is at ricksmithauthor.
And his website is awesome.
Website is pretty cool.
I mean, I got to be honest with you. Todd and I work with a lot of authors, and some of these websites, they...
Stink.
Well, yeah, they suck. Yep. This website is awesome, so definitely go to this website and check it out, and all of those resources are there.
Well, let me just take a quick second and commend you, Rick, that you mentioned something a few minutes ago that I want to be sure that our audience hears and understands, is that you invested a lot of energy in creating this primary color assessment. What you could have done is charged for it. You could have required people to give urine samples to get access to this. But I commend you to making it a public or free thing. I mean, so many people out there still are stuck in the old mentality that they have to give a firstborn to get access to that kind of thing. I guarantee if you had charged or required an email address even, you wouldn't have near 600,000 views on that. So let that be a lesson to our audience. If you create some sort of a device like that, that is helpful, that's something in this day and age you need to be sharing for free.
Well, you know, and it's interesting that you say that, because as I've, you know, sunk myself into social media, I think that's probably the number one thing that people miss, right? In traditional networking, you talk about the people that are the most connected people in any city, they're the ones that give the most. All they do is spend 100% of their time trying to connect the dots and make useful introductions to people or do something positive, and over time it comes back to help them in some way. It's the same, you know, people miss that on Twitter. You know, the reason the people that are the most popular on Twitter outside of the celebrities are the ones that continually give away, you know, 10 times the information. They're just leading people to things, and every once in a while they'll remind them that, hey, I've got some products too. But it's all about, you know, doing things for the act of giving with the hope, you know, you can control the giving. You can't control when you receive benefit from it, but the more you give, you ultimately will receive a lot of benefit.
Should we teach them our analogy and how to sell that? Maybe not.
You like to do that analogy on every show.
I can find a way to talk about that on every show. You know, Rick, it's the notion of excuse me, Stephanie, for telling the story. Don't be offended.
She's heard it before, I'm sure.
I probably did on the show. Another
Rick,
show.
We'll cut this out in post, okay? Because you're not going to want to post this, but go ahead.
Okay, never mind.
No, I want to hear it. Go ahead.
No, it's the notion of the woman in the bikini. She's given you 90%.
You can leave this in the clip.
She's yes. She's wearing the bikini, so she's giving you 90% of her, but there's a lot of people out there would pay a lot of money to get that last 10%. So that's a great way. We just stumbled upon that not too long ago.
As
a great way to help people understand that, yeah, you can give. A lot of the concern out there is that I can't tell everybody all that I know, because then if I tell everybody all that I know, they're not going to need to hire me for anything. So anyway, that's just.
Todd Schnick, ladies and gentlemen.
Absolutely.
Before we let you go, Rick, we have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show. We like to ask each guest if they would to share a mistake that they've made at some point in their career, and really, more importantly, what they feel like they learned from it. Could we get you to do that for us?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are obviously specific things. I think the Christmas party of 93 was right up there. But you know, I would say the biggest, the biggest mistake I made in general was looking at my mistakes the wrong way, and by that I mean defending myself, sort of going back into this automatic defense mechanism of, wow, that was a failure. It's someone else's fault, or it's some set of external problems or external factors that forced me into that failure, and so you don't really internalize. Hey, there are some reason you don't have to be great at everything. In fact, you know, I've been so fortunate to work with Bono and Robert Redford and, you know, Francis Ford Coppola, all these amazing people. And the one similar characteristic across all of these super successful people is they figured out the one thing they are so good at. And their confidence makes them so willing to give up on everything else. I mean, it's amazing how humble they are about that everybody else can do everything better than I except this one thing. And I think that's what, you know, your failures are a way of, and your mistakes are a way of teaching you what are the, you know, they're direction points for you. And if the more you look at them like, oh, it's somebody else's fault, the less you take the lesson from it that, hey, maybe I'm not good at cost reengineering where I was, you know, laid off from a company. I was like, hey, it's not my fault. I was ranked higher than this guy or that guy or, you know, whatever. When the reality is I should have never been in that in the first place. And that was, you know, I was fortunate to find out sooner rather than later to move into a different direction.
Well, that is sound advice and very encouraging. I think, Todd, you and I have a lot of material to work with if we can look at our failures and use that to really give us some direction on where we ought to take our work.
We have a lot of mistakes to look at differently. Yes, we do.
Well, Rick, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show. I hope you'll come back and visit with us again sometime.
I'd love to.
Can you hang out for a little while we introduce our next guest?
Certainly.
Terrific. Well, Todd, who do we have up next, buddy?
Well, our next guest on High Velocity Radio is a dear friend of the High Velocity family and, quite honestly, a good friend of the Radio X family as well. So welcome to the show, Stephanie Frost.
Good morning.
Well, congratulations to you and your co-author, who was too chicken to show up today, Eric Wolf, on the launch of Marketing Unmasked.
Well, thanks. We're really excited.
So tell us a little bit about the book.
Well, we wrote the book, we run a marketing agency, and we wrote the book primarily because we were getting a lot of questions. The questions that we were getting from our clients, and they're mostly small to mid-sized businesses, so they don't have huge marketing budgets. We were getting a lot of questions, really just sort of, you know, the basics, but some higher level marketing concepts. And we kind of felt like we needed to put it, you know, we have a blog, we have a lot of information out there, white papers, whatnot, but we felt like we kind of needed to collate all of that information, put it into one place. The book seemed like a logical place to do that. It also had it had that benefit that we have a little bit more credibility now, you know, what we say, because we did, you know, take the time to put it into that format, and we can give people that, they can read it, you know, before they even meet with us and decide, you know, do we like these people's, you know, their ideas. So we did that like I said, as a way to kind of help our clients and help the community that we serve, which is, like I said, the entrepreneurs, the small to mid-sized businesses.
Well, that's a reason why a lot of people in our industry write books is to get that $20 business card, if you will.
Exactly.
It's just a different way to position yourself in the marketplace. The book's only been is only recently been published. Have you noticed a difference in going to market with it?
We have actually. I met with a client for our first meetings. He showed up with the book and had me sign it, and said after he read the book, he knew that he wanted to hire us. So, yeah, it is the $25 business card, but it's also it's nice to be able to, you know, that advice that we give in the book. It's nice that people are, that it's resonating with them, and they're able to use that advice. I mean, so even if they can't afford to hire us, let's say they're starting from ground zero, they can use it as a guide. We set it up so that it can be used almost as a how-to.
Well,
it's very tactical.
Yes, I commended Rick on giving away the primary color assessment, but I wanted to commend you two for giving that book away as an ebook.
Yes,
for free.
It is free. Yeah, you can purchase it if you like holding a book in your hands. You can purchase it on Amazon, but we also offer it for free at zerogcreative.com/marketingunmasked.
Yeah, that's great.
With the exception of page 15, it really is a very solid read. And Stone has formally endorsed the book. But I have a question for you, because I'm in the throes right now of collaborating with a co-author. You know, on my first book, I went it alone, did it on my own. But now I have someone riding my coattails as we write Circlenomics. What was it like? She's laughing.
Poor
silently.
Todd.
What was it like collaborating with a co-author? What were some of the positives and negatives? What was that experience like for you?
Well, I mean, largely positive, because writing a book is hard no matter how you slice and dice it. I am a writer by education, but I'd never written a book, so I have a lot of unfinished work out there. But
I'm a ping pong player by education.
Yeah.
Just so you know. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, no, but I mean, I was an English major. So, you know, when we sat down to do this, we kind of divided and conquered, so to speak. But what was nice about it is that you are kind of accountable to your co-author. So if you're, you know, there is no such thing as writer's block when, you know, you have these deadlines, and you do, mm-hmm. We set deadlines. We missed all of them, but we did set deadlines for each other and said, okay, you have to have your chapter in by this time and et cetera. So, the other thing that was nice about it too, is that we really didn't disagree too much. Our perspectives are different enough, but they're also similar enough that, you know, they were very complementary. So as we were setting it up, you know, we had different areas of expertise. So that was nice as well, because, you know, I could take the chapters that, you know, where I felt like I had more of a strength, because, you know, I've been in sales, marketing, business development most of my career. And then Eric was able to do, you know, to talk about some of his experiences in consumer products and that kind of thing. So it was a great, I mean, all in all, I'll have to say that co-writing a book might be easier because you do have to, you know, you have to keep going with it no matter what.
Well, the great thing about the book is that it is a pretty full survey about all the different things that a small business person and entrepreneur ought to be thinking about. But if there was one chapter in that book that you would want someone to read, is there one specific thing that you think would be the most profound?
Yeah, the branding chapter, I think, could be made into an entirely, you know, a book, a standalone book, because it covers so much. And when you say branding to most people, their eyes glaze over. First of all, they don't even really know what branding is, and that's mostly because it's such an overused word. Branding, you know, anyone who sells you, you know, pens or promotional products or whatever, you know, they say they're a marketing and branding expert. So, you know, branding, but what people don't realize is how all-encompassing branding is. And I mean, it starts with the person who's answering your phone or not answering your phone, your automated phone system. Is it a voicemail tree from hell or, you know, whatever. It's that experience, that it's the total experience that a prospect or a current customer has with your brand and your business. So that's all part of your brand. And it goes way beyond your logo, your tagline, your website, your marketing material. I mean, it is just, it's all encompassing. So I think we really could expand that chapter, and that could be a standalone book on just,
I agree.
You know, how to.
Well, we talked about Gary Vaynerchuk earlier on the show and
who will be here tonight?
Who will be in town tonight for a book signing. But,
oh, really? Cool.
But, but you know, he says, I'm not really the wine guy. I'm the personal branding guy.
Exactly.
That's, and, You know, but when you ask a person on the street, you know, well, give me a recognized brand, they'll say, well, Nike.
Right.
You know, but branding is so much more than that now. And you can put out 5 tweets on Twitter and you begin to brand yourself with the message you're delivering. I don't think a lot of people get that.
No, from the very beginning, exactly. And because we were talking about Gary, I mean, if you are going to start with the social media tools and, you know, you're going to start building your brand from Twitter, from a blog, from whatever. Yes, you have to be very aware of how you're positioning yourself from the very first, you know, word that you put out there or whatever you say.
You guys are genuine marketing pros. Did you sit down and set out a marketing strategy of some kind to bring your book to market?
Yeah, we actually did look at, you know, how we were going to position this. I mean, we looked at a lot of different options. You know, we went the self-publishing route only because we were looking, we had a time crunch factor, and so we didn't have the luxury of, and I'm not knocking traditional publishing because I obviously think it still has a, you know, it still serves a great purpose, but from where we were sitting, we needed the information out there, so it was more about getting that information into the hands of the people that needed it, rather than us having to contact an agent waiting for us, you know, a rejection letter probably, and then having to, you know, go through that exercise and then waiting for it to be published, et cetera. So we had the expertise and the ability to, you know, lay out the book, design everything. I mean, that part of it we could do on our own. And then beyond that, you know, building the website and doing a lot of the press surrounding, you know, promoting the book. As marketing people, we definitely have a strategy, and we're going to, you know, we got a speaking engagement. We're going to be at South by Southwest Interactive doing
I was just going to ask if you were doing any cool interactive conferences in Texas coming up soon.
Yes, sorry. We're really excited. Sorry, I jumped the gun on that because I'm so excited. We found out not too long ago that we'll be speaking at South by South. We'll be doing a book reading at South by Southwest.
So explain what that means, a book reading. I, first of all, congratulations.
That's cool.
A big
congratulations.
Cool to those in this social media space, that's the end-all, be-all.
Well, you know what happened. Whoever makes those decisions saw the video Dust Jacket interview, and they said, we have got to have these people.
Despite.
Exactly. They probably fast-forwarded through his part.
Yes, right. Sure they did.
So South by Southwest Interactive, which is part of the entire South by Southwest Festival, which includes film and music, is in March, and the book readings are, so they have panels, core conversations, and book readings. And the book readings are shorter, they're about 20 minutes long, and they have those in an area, sort of a central area where people, you know, are kind of passing by and whatnot. So there's a lot of people in and out of there, but it's really cool because, like, I met David Meerman Scott last year at a book reading, and got to hear him talk about Worldwide Rave and got a free book. And, you know, so it's a great place to discover people. And so that's kind of what we're hoping, that people are just, you know, they come by, they come to our, I mean, they may not set out to, hopefully they will, but, you know, they may or may not set out to come to our book reading, but end up there and we'll, you know, meet some new people and get some traction, you know, with the book.
So how many book readings will there be? Will there be 5? Will there be 50?
I don't know how many. Yeah, there are quite a few. There's a, you know, quite a few. If you log on to sxsw.com, you can see some of the panels, core conversations, and book readings.
But I imagine there were hundreds of submissions. So
yeah, I think there were it's a big conference. I mean, it lasts for 6 days. It's quite a time commitment on our part. We're down there for a week. So and that's the other thing too, is networking with some of the bigger names in social media. Like last year, I got to meet Chris Brogan, Guy Kawasaki, Gary Vaynerchuk.
Stone Payton, all those guys, right?
Are you guys going this year?
We'll be there.
All right.
Well, I don't know if you're going.
I'm following you, babe.
He's staying in your hotel room.
Yes.
He'll be crashing on your couch.
Or on the floor. Zero-G party house.
Right.
Now, do you find yourself, as a result of this, actually getting people to write you checks to give them advice on how to take their book to market?
Yeah, people just throw money at me. they do. I mean, you know, it has helped in the fact that, like I said, it gives, you know, anytime you take the time to put something down on paper and, you know, make it a usable format like a book, that people can, you know, look at and say, okay, oh, I can do this, and that. But then I can also call these people and get the benefit of their in-person expertise. Yeah, I think it has helped with that. I mean, we're seeing a lot more activity.
Are the two of you going to do another book? You talked about maybe doing something a little bit more.
I think we're probably, I mean, we'll, it took a lot of time, and it actually took some time away from our core business to do this. So what we'll probably, you know, wait just to kind of catch up from what we, you know, what
you
we
don't
lost.
Have to take dramatic risk and you don't have to change who you are, and you're not
I'm not a late night person.
Come on,
so,
take the leap,
you know. Yeah, right.
Take the leap.
No, there was I was working a lot of weekends on the book, not so much at night, but anyway, yeah. So I think what we'll continue to do, I mean, we publish white papers, we try and put out a lot of useful information for free, give it out, you know, give it to people, and if it helps them, great, and if they eventually become clients, that's terrific.
Now, you guys have started something new with your websites, because you do what Todd and I would characterize as Jim Jammy websites. I mean, you do really high-end work, but you've also got this new line of quick launch
websites.
Say more about that and who that's for. And
right.
That kind of
thing. So we've really milked that whole space theme at Zero G Creative. You know, our show Gravity Free Radio, and now we've got Quick Launch. That's Eric. Quick Launch is designed for people who don't have, and again, most of our clients don't have huge marketing budgets, but the Quick Launch sites are for people who have really much smaller marketing budgets than small, just this regular small. So they're, you know, the cost of entry to get a, you know, a professional looking website is around $1,200. So it's not as, you know, it's not that expensive.
No, not at all. Not compared to what you would traditionally pay for a really high-end website. And it's good looking. And your book website is a pretty good example of mm-hmm. what a quick launch site would look
yeah,
like.
Yeah, so
right?
marketingandmess.com is one of those sites, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I got a client that's going to do one of those this week. So.
Oh, cool.
No, it's good stuff. It's a great program.
You know, this economy is so tough on people, and we really thought, you know, we need something that will, I mean, a blog, we talked about this in the book. If you have zero money, I mean, you can sign up for a WordPress.com, or if you're smart enough to, you know, go through the self-hosting, you can use a WordPress.org and build a, you know, an okay site. But this is sort of the next step. So this is, you know, after the do-it-yourself, this is kind of in between the do-it-yourself and the hiring us to do a full-blown professional custom.
Because it's my opinion. I'm curious to know if you agree or no, that if you're in business in this day and age, you ought to have a blog, period. I always tell clients and prospects, well, it's not for everybody, but I've yet to find anybody that could benefit from doing something like that.
Right, and we talk about that as well. I mean, blogging is really something that it's more interactive, first of all. So it's a much more personal approach to business, and I've yet to find a client that would not benefit from blogging. But there's, you know, some people that aren't good at writing. They aren't consistent, so they might put up a blog post and then 3 months later they put up another blog post. So, you know, it does require some commitment on their part, and that's one of the things we talk about. But, you know, if you aren't comfortable with writing, consider doing an audio blog or a video blog. I mean, there are other ways around it.
Well, they always say, well, I'm never going to get as many followers as like a Chris Brogan. And they're like, that's not the goal. Most people aren't.
No.
The goal, if nothing else, you get fresh, relevant content mm-hmm. that you publish on a regular basis. That's important for the search engine.
Right. And we talk about SEO a little bit in the book as well. That's also another book that we wouldn't probably write, but that's a huge thing. you know, and SEO, as more and more people are out there, I mean, that's important. So, you know, you're not going to be, I mean, you know, if you type in Atlanta Marketing Agency, we're not going to show up. I mean, you know, we might, I guess, but, you know, so that is really critical, is to have that fresh content showing up on your website on a consistent basis. Video blogging, especially these days, because Google now owns YouTube, that content is more recognized, and it's definitely a way to get your site, whether it's your, you know, business, and always have your, I mean, if you can, always make sure that your blog is hosted on the same site, same place as your website. That's
and
it.
Your quick launch programs enable
exactly,
you to do
that. And we enable that exactly.
Well, we at High Velocity do an awful lot of video blogging, as you know.
Yes,
because we can't write.
Well, because we can't write,
and because you're so good looking.
Yeah, that's
people
it.
People love watching you.
Okay, see, I know she's just blown smoke up our butt now. So, anyway, yeah. So you see the burden I have of Stone,
right.
But we're still going to do this video blogging thing, and it's still
we have a mask he can wear.
Episode 7 on the Video Dust Jacket Tour.
Anybody ever video blogged wearing masks before? I don't know. Yeah. I wonder if anybody's been silly enough to do that. I think, I don't know, you may disagree with this. I think in a few years, I think a majority of the blogs will be video blogs.
Oh, absolutely. And then, you know, we talked about on our show, we had a guest from Turn Here, which is doing videos for small businesses. And I do. I think that when you have services like that, and, you know, all it really takes is a flip video camera or, you know, whatever. And you can have a video up on YouTube in, I don't know, 20 minutes.
The question is, does anybody else travel with their flips and Crown Royal bags like we do?
That's pretty styling, Todd.
I know, we're pretty just, cool.
So you know, Todd has his flip in a Crown Royal bag. I'm not sure why.
Because Stone put it in the Crown Royal bag, but you know, hey, it's okay.
So. Well, you mentioned briefly, and we ought to let our listeners know if they don't already, and they probably do, that you are a member of the Radio X family, and you and Eric have your own radio show. Tell the listeners a little bit more about your radio show and kind of guests that you have on there and what you're trying to do for folks.
So Gravity Free Radio was also a good, it was good for content for the book. We actually pulled some of the content from the radio show into the book. We started that as a public service, if you will, to our listeners, which we hope are, who we hope are small businesses, entrepreneurs, startups. So the guests that we have are, generally speaking, guests that would have information relevant to that audience. So whether it's specialist on how to hire for a small business, you know, when is it time to expand and start to hire employees, IP law. I'm trying to think what else we've done. I mean, author. You know, we talked to a lot of authors. Chris Brogan was on our show, for instance.
They have a lot of big names on their show. I think Rick is like one of the first big names we've had, isn't he?
Well, you got me, but yeah, other than that, yeah, Rick probably is the first.
So who does your booking? Who's your booking agent?
Moi.
You're the booking agent.
Yes.
Wow. Man, maybe we can con you into booking some folks for us. I mean, seriously, they've got some real celebrities on their show. Yeah.
Well, you know how, but how do you do that, Stone? I mean, you talk about how to utilize the book to market. I mean, when your book's going to be presented at South by Southwest and you meet people like David Meerman Scott, and you establish relationships.
Yeah, he was on our show.
That's right. That's how this works, you know. And
right.
Now, just so you know, when you see David again, he is a space fanatic.
Yes.
He is absolutely an Apollo. There's probably no one more nutty about the Apollo program than David Meerman Scott. So you use your quick launch all that stuff. I mean, he and I have become friends because of, I named my company after an Apollo spacecraft
Intrepid.
So I sent him a tweet on that one day, and boy, he and I have this ongoing dialogue. He's commented on my blog. He's a wonderful.
He's a nice guy. Yeah, we met him when he was here in Atlanta as well.
Yeah.
So,
but that's how people can get these big names as part of their communities. Just,
you know what? It is really just ask, honestly,
really,
and be persistent. Like to get Chris on the show. You know, originally they're like, oh, he can't come on. You know, he was going to be here in Atlanta for New Media Atlanta, and he couldn't come on surrounding that. So I said, well, that's okay. We can have him on, you know, whenever. And, well, he's not going to be available for a couple of months. Okay, that's fine. No problem. We'll book him then, you know. And I just kept, kept trying to get him on, and eventually it, you know, worked,
but
it worked
is
out
just
with his
asking.
Schedule. It is just asking, yeah. With
I mean,
any
we
of
haven't
people.
Had him on High Velocity yet, but we have featured him on our little He Said, She mm-hmm. Said series that I have with Stephanie Lloyd. So, I mean, you just got to ask them, and they'll participate, and they have fun doing that.
Well, and they do, and to a point that Rick Smith made earlier about, you know, folks that are doing this and doing it well, how they invest in relationships.
Right.
One of the things that just absolutely blew me away, well, two things. I really, I did not expect this guy to be as solid and as substantial as he is. I mean, the guy's got a lot to offer, so I really think a lot of this guy, period, just his content. But what just absolutely blew me away when he came down for New Media, what a just genuinely good guy. He's a nice guy. He's accessible, and he'll try to help you out any way he can. And he's authentic. He's the real deal, and he's exactly what Rick was describing earlier in terms of really living into all these ideas that he's espousing on his blog and through
the
channels.
Well, I think he's the definition of internet famous, and yet he is as approachable, and any given morning, you can tweet him, and he'll converse.
And I think
with you
have to stay that way. I mean, you just can't. I mean, no matter how, you know, not that our book is going to propel us to, you know, stardom or anything, but no matter how well known or, you know, you've got a great, you can't forget that the people who put you there were, you know, your fans. So you have to stay. So we, you know, and that's the other thing is we try and answer. You talked about, you know, using Twitter and blogs, and we really try and answer a lot of questions. I mean, I personally spend a lot of time on Twitter. So,
and a lot of the topics, a lot of things you talked about in the book came from just questions from the community, from clients, from Twitter, and all mm-hmm. that. So That's how you generated the original content. I think we're about out of time.
Yeah, we are about out of time. A couple of things. Where can our listeners get to this video dust jacket interview that I know they No, where
that
can
was
they,
so well done.
That was extremely well
done. Actually, no, you guys did a great job.
Well, it was fun. It was one of our early ones, I think. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the camera work may be a little bit shoddy, but I'm getting this death stare. Where can our listeners find your book, find out more about your organization?
Sure. So our book is at marketingunmasked.com. And then our agency is zerogcreative.com. And you can follow both of us on Twitter. I'm SW Frost, and Eric is at Eric Wolf. E-R-I-K.
Terrific. Well, we're not going to let you go yet. As you know, we have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show. We like to ask each guest if they would share a mistake that they've made at some point in their career, and really, more importantly, what they feel like they've learned from it. How about doing that for us?
I haven't made any mistakes. No, I'm kidding. You know, honestly, I think that I probably didn't do a great job of defining my goals early in my career. I kind of tried. I mean, it was in a way it was good. I got to try a lot of different things. I bounced around from a lot of different industries. But I think if, you know, if I had any advice to give either my kids as they're going through school and, you know, when they first come out, you know, no matter what they ultimately end up doing, having some I mean, my mistake was that I just sort of went where the job offer was. It wasn't like I had any, you know, I kind of ended up somewhere rather than saying I am, you know, and that's why this book, The Leap, really interests me, because I think that a lot of kids coming out today, especially with this economy, you know, they're just going to take whatever. I mean, you know, if you can get a job at Starbucks, probably take it, because, you know, there's just not that much out there. But at the same time, have some goals, you know, and know where you want to head, like know what you want to do, because it took me a while and, you know, sort of a late bloomer to say, okay, this is, you know, and I was laid off too. And that's sort of what happened with me. I thought, well, what is it I really enjoy doing? And that's when I sat down and wrote out all of the things that I think I'm good at, may not be what, you know, everyone thinks, but you know, at least I have sort of a plan now. I have a roadmap to follow, whereas I didn't before. I just kind of, you know, so that was my mistake. But, you know, I met some great people along the way, so I can't say it was a total loss.
Yeah, I didn't think you were going to answer that way. I a lot of you may not know that Stephanie and I are both political operatives in our past. So
that's,
I thought,
true.
Your mistake was going to be the political persuasion that you opted for. But
no, working for Bill was awesome.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That, we have to do a show where we talk about your experiences with Bill.
And your experience with W?
Yeah, I think that would be a...
That would be a fun show.
Entertaining.
Just for the record, I did not deliver him pizza.
Nor did you lie under oath, like some people we may know, right?
We won't go there. I have a whole bunch of things I could say, but I'm just
no. But you know what? Like, but it's true. I mean, I thought I wanted to be in politics. I mean, that was like, I got out and I was like, oh, that English degree, whatever. And then I thought I wanted to be in politics, and you know, it was okay. It was a good experience, but you know, I just didn't. I kind of just jumped around. So, you know, everyone always says life happens when you're making other plans. I mean, to some degree, that's true. But I think that definitely having a set of, you know, goals or a vision for what you want your career to be is.
I'm in marketing, and my political career did more to train me for marketing than anything else I've done. So, you know, I don't regret.
It's not a bad thing, right?
Oh, absolutely not. So,
well, I'd love to get laid off just once. I've always just been flat out fired or quit. What's that like, getting laid off? That sounds like an interesting.
You get a severance package. I've always gotten severance packages. So
I've
never
gotten anywhere near a severance package.
No. I hope there's a good one for High Velocity.
Yeah. No kidding. Well, what a great show. That was fun, wasn't it, buddy?
It sure was. Another tough day at the office, Stone.
Yeah. Well, we want to encourage our listeners, if you haven't already gone out and gotten them, get your hands on The Leap, How Three Simple Changes Can Propel Your Career from Good to Great by Rick Smith. Go to leapbuilder.com and look into Marketing Unmasked at marketingunmasked.com. Both products are gluten-free, and I guarantee you're going to enjoy them both. Until next time. This is Stone Payton, Todd Schnick, Stephanie Frost, Rick Smith, our producer Lee Cantor, and everyone at the Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.